Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 17th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look back at the Mother Emanuel Amy massacre 5 years ago, the voice of the late Senator Clemente Pinckney, the latest on what's happening on the COVID-19 hotspot in Greenville, a look at police reform legislation from Senator Tim Scott, testimony from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell about the economy moving forward. And just so you know, out of respect for those we lost 5 years ago at Mother Emanuel, we will be skipping the wind-down section in this episode. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That's right, just tell us what you're doing, if you're going to work, if you're going out to eat, what kind of activities you're doing or not doing. We want to know, and if you've been diagnosed with COVID-19 or know someone that has, let us know about your experience or their experience at 803-563-7169. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and leave us a message. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 617 deaths, and currently there are 20,551 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 17th at 4 p.m. And some more insight here. The total number of individuals tested Tuesday statewide was 4,409, and of those, the percent positive rate was 13.1%. When we look at hospital beds, as of this morning, 3,087 inpatient hospital beds are available in the state, and 7,411 are in use. Of those beds, 607 are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. So again, a record number there of patients being hospitalized for COVID-19 at 607 patients with the disease. And as you've heard, we've surpassed 20,000 cases in the state. So let's look at how long it took us to get here. So prepare for some numbers. Some simple math that I had AT help me with because, I mean, not my strong suit. So here we are about 100 days into this pandemic. And to reach our first 5,000 cases, it took about 50 days. That put us around April 24th. In the 50 days since then to today, we have reached 20,000 cases. So we've gone up 300% since then. Translation, the plateau is out of sight as we continue our way up the mountain of COVID-19. It's been 5 years since 9 black parishioners were murdered by a white supremacist at Mother Emanuel Amy Church in Charleston, a horrific massacre in an attempt to spark a race war that never occurred. We honor the lives of Reverend Clemente Pinckney, Cynthia Hurd, Susie Jackson, Ethel Lee Lance, DePayne Middleton Doctor, Tawanza Sanders, Daniel L. Simmons, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, and Myra Thompson, and we continue to strive for racial equality in these turbulent times. Chris Singleton, the son of Sharonda Coleman Singleton, was just a college student when his mother was murdered. South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen has this interview with Singleton and how his life has changed and the responsibilities that have multiplied for him.
5 years ago, Chris Singleton was a carefree college student, dreaming of playing professional baseball, when he got a call that changed his life.
I'll never forget it. I was 18 years old, got a call on my phone, from my mom's phone, actually. And the lady on the other end was saying, Chris, you got to get down here right now. Something bad happened.
A stranger graciously welcomed to Bible study at Mother Emanuel Amy Church in downtown Charleston had pulled out a gun while the parishioner's eyes were closed in prayer. He fired more than 70 rounds, leaving 9 people dead, including Chris's mother, Sharonda Singleton. The white gunman said he wanted to start a race war, all of the victims were Black. The next night, surrounded by teammates and coaches from Charleston Southern University, Chris Singleton stunned a broken community as he spoke publicly for the first time.
I just say love is always stronger than hate. So if we just love the way my mom would, then the hate won't be anywhere close to what love is.
Singleton says he doesn't know where those words came from. His knees were shaking. Life without his mother was a whirlwind.
Because my mom was everything to me.
He poured his pain into baseball and was drafted by the Chicago Cubs. His father died. His two teenage siblings came to live with him. He married his high school sweetheart. The couple welcomed a son. Suddenly, Singleton had a lot of responsibility. But he also felt responsible to his mom. And those words that came so effortlessly, love is stronger than hate.
I need you to give somebody a hug that looks different than you and tell them you love them. Come on now, don't be too cool.
So he began traveling and speaking about racism.
And crazy enough, people have said to me, Chris, you know, that was the first time I've ever hugged somebody that doesn't look like me.
He shared his story of losing his mother with people of all ages, in groups large and small.
Now, the reason why I do that is literally because my mom was taken away from me because she was Black. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A man walked into my church and fired 70-plus bullets to start a race war.
Like when I share, I hope that I can stop one kid who would grow up to maybe be Dylann Roof. You know, I'm hoping I would stop one kid that was taught to hate Black people that doesn't think that way anymore after hearing me speak.
Singleton's high school basketball coach, Blake Hall, has been by his side the entire time and watched him grow.
I think your true character comes out during your darkest moments, you know.
He knew Sharonda. She was a track coach. He sees her spirit in Chris.
He's just a positive light, you know, and he's a great example.
On this, the five-year anniversary of his mother's death, Chris Singleton is releasing a children's book called Different.
And it's basically just teaching every kid to love people, no matter what their differences are.
It's the story of a young boy from Nigeria who moves to Charleston, but is teased because he's different. Singleton reads his favorite part. It's when the boy confides in a teacher.
She handed him a tissue. Her eyes were soft, the kind of eyes that seem to know exactly what you're feeling without you having to say a word. They sat in silence for a long time. Then, never be ashamed of who you are, Obina, Miss Sharonda said. You're beautifully and wonderfully made.
Miss Sharonda is, of course, Singleton's mom, his teacher.
You know, I always say, I hope I'm making my mom proud, and smiles are in heaven for sure right now.
Reverend Clemente Pinckney was the pastor of Mother Emmanuel and was one of those who was killed the evening of June 17, 2015. I remember seeing him earlier that day in a Senate Finance Committee meeting in which he excused himself early to get to the Bible study in Charleston. Everyone who ever heard him speak remembers his strong voice. I remember it woke me up during that hearing, a sign of a good pastor. 2 months prior, Pinckney, who represented Jasper County, spoke on the Senate floor about the tragic shooting of Walter Scott, as he and other senators pushed for mandatory body cameras for all officers in South Carolina. He also spoke of justice and forgiveness, an eerie foreshadowing of what was to come.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, when we first heard on the television that a police officer had gunned down an unarmed African-American in North Charleston by the name of Walter Scott, there were some who said, wow. The national story has come home to South Carolina. But there were many who said there is no way that a police officer would ever shoot somebody in the back 6, 7, 8 times. But like Thomas, when we were able to see the video and we were able to see the gunshots and when we saw him fall to the ground, and when we saw the police officer come and handcuff him on the ground without even trying to resuscitate him, without even seeing if he was really alive, without calling an ambulance, without calling for help, and to see him die face down in the ground as if he were gunned down like game. I believe we all were like Thomas and said, I believe. What if Mr. Santiago was not there to record what happened? I'm sure that many of us would still say, like Thomas, we don't believe. I believe that as a legislature, that as a state, we have a great opportunity to allow sunshine into this process, to at least give us new eyes for seeing, so that we're able to make sure that our proud and great law enforcement officers and every citizen that we represent is able to at least know that they will be seen and heard and that their rights will be protected. It is my hope and desire that in South Carolina, where we have great multinational companies like Boeing, which is located just a stone's throw from where Walter Scott died, where we have a great international airport, and where the ports are not far away from this spot, it is my hope that as South Carolina senators, that we will stand up for what is best and good about our state and really adopt this legislation and find a way to have body cameras in South Carolina. Our hearts go out to the Scott family. Our hearts go out to the Flagler family, because the Lord teaches us to love all, and we pray that over time, that justice be done.
2 weeks later, the Senate passed a body camera bill, and the House supported it. It was signed into law on June 10th, a week before Pinckney was killed. Bringing us to the current day, on Wednesday, we got our first look at the federal police reform legislation by Senate Republicans led by Senator Tim Scott. His Justice Act legislation does not ban chokeholds, but if police departments don't certify that they've stopped the practice, then federal funds can be withheld. The bill doesn't outlaw the practice of no-knock warrants either, since Scott said there is not enough adequate data on the procedure. His bill does require data collection on that practice and others, as well as requiring departments to share updated disciplinary information on officers who apply for other jobs. Senator Tim Scott was flanked by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham, and others when he announced his Justice Act legislation, and he shared some of his experiences.
Too often we're having a discussion in this nation about, are you supporting the law enforcement community or are you supporting communities of color? This is a false binary choice. The answer to the question of which side do you support, it's I support America. And if you support America, you support restoring the confidence that communities of color have in institutions of authority. If you support America, that means you know that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation want to do their job, go home to their family. It is not a binary choice. This legislation encompasses that spirit. It speaks to the fact that we believe that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation are good people, working hard, trying to keep order in the communities. Communities of color, and people like myself, I've told my story several times, stopped 7 times in 1 year. That has been said a lot, but I was stopped this year driving while black when I got a warning ticket for failing to use my turn signal earlier in my lane change. And so this issue continues, and that's why it's so important for us to say that we hear you. We're listening to your concerns. The George Floyd incident certainly accelerated this conversation, and we find ourselves at a place with a package that I think speaks to the families that I spoke with yesterday who lost loved ones. We hear you.
The Justice Act also does not address qualified immunity, which shields officers from personal liability, something that is at the center of the Democrats' bill. McConnell is fast-tracking Scott's bill to the floor next week.
But the witnessing of the murder of George Floyd and the experience in my hometown of Breonna Taylor certainly brings to the forefront this issue for all Americans, including Senate Republicans. My role as the leader, as you know, is to decide what we're going to do. Floor time is the coin of the realm in the Senate because it does take a while to do almost anything. So what I'm announcing today is after we do 2 circuit judges who are queued up either this week or early next week, we're going to turn to the Scott bill. I'm going to file cloture on the motion to proceed. And our Democratic friends, if they want to make a law and not just try to make a point, I hope they'll join us in getting on the bill and trying to move forward in the way the Senate does move forward when it's trying to actually get an outcome rather than just sparring back and forth, which you all have seen on frequent occasions by both sides.
Some Republican senators have said that Scott's bill doesn't go far enough and have introduced separate bills, like Senator Rand Paul's, that would outlaw no-knock warrants, the kind that led to the death of Breonna Taylor when Louisville police stormed her apartment unannounced in March, because her apartment was believed to be a location her former boyfriend had drugs sent to. When police entered her apartment, her current boyfriend shot at the police, thinking it was a robbery. Taylor was shot 8 times and died, and drugs were never found in her apartment. Scott's bill would also require departments to report incidents involving an officer discharging their weapon to the FBI, something currently done only 40% of the time. The bill would also make lynching a federal crime. The Department of Justice would develop and provide de-escalation training and more.
I don't think the nation's going to allow us to lose the momentum. That's good news. I've had multiple conversations with Senator Booker, no conversations with Senator Harris, and I look forward to finding a middle ground where the motion to proceed will have, as been articulated here already, 100 votes to move forward so that we can actually have a robust debate about how to make the legislation better and serve the American people. And so I hope that he is willing to cooperate on getting us there, but certainly without any Democrat support, that means that this is only a symbolic moment and not a moment for us to make a law. Let me say it this way. If we don't have the votes on a motion to proceed, that means that politics is more important than restoring confidence in communities of color in the institutions of authority.
You can read the full bill and an analysis of it via links in our show notes. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell gave testimony this week virtually before the Senate Banking Committee, in which he said that a full economic recovery may not happen until there is a vaccine for COVID-19, and that the recession has not fallen equally on all Americans. Here are some clips from his opening remarks to the committee on Tuesday.
And the reported unemployment rate has risen about 10 percentage points to 13.3%. The decline in real GDP this quarter is likely to be the most severe on record. The burden of the downturn has not fallen equally on all Americans. Instead, those least able to withstand the downturn have been affected most. As discussed in the June monetary policy report, low-income households have experienced by far the sharpest drop in employment, while job losses of African Americans, Hispanics, and women have been greater than that of other groups. If not contained and reversed, the downturn could further widen gaps in economic well-being that the long expansion had made some progress in closing. Recently, some indicators have pointed to a stabilization and in some areas a modest rebound in economic activity. With an easing of restrictions on mobility and commerce and the extension of federal loans and grants, some businesses are opening up, while stimulus checks and unemployment benefits are supporting household incomes and spending. Until the public is confident that this disease is contained, a full recovery is unlikely. Moreover, the longer the downturn lasts, the greater the potential for longer-term damage from permanent job loss and business closures. Long periods of unemployment can erode workers' skills and hurt their future job prospects. If a small or medium-sized business becomes insolvent because the economy recovers too slowly, we lose more than just that business. These businesses are the heart of our economy and often embody the work of generations. With weak demand and large price declines for some goods and services, such as apparel, gasoline, air travel, and hotels, consumer price inflation has dropped noticeably in recent months. But indicators of longer-term inflation expectations have remained fairly steady.
Chairman Powell also gave a look at what the Fed has been doing to stabilize the economy, including stabilizing short-term funding markets and providing more direct access to credit.
Since March, we have been purchasing sizable quantities of Treasury securities and agency mortgage-backed securities in order to support the smooth functioning of these markets, which are vital to the flow of credit in the economy. As described in the monetary policy report, these purchases have helped restore orderly market conditions and have fostered more accommodative financial conditions. As market functioning has improved since the strains experienced in March, we have gradually reduced the pace of these purchases.
So again, the second quarter GDP decline is expected to be the most severe on record, according to Powell. We'll find out just how severe when we get to the Q2 GDP estimate on July 30th. Over the past few weeks, Greenville County has become a hotspot of COVID-19 cases, and recently, medical and public health officials issued an update on the situation in the state's most populous county. It's also home to the state's largest Hispanic population at 9% of its 524,000 residents, and health officials say that population has seen its infection rates dramatically jump. Dr. Brandon Traxler with DHEC said that when cases increase in areas, DHEC works with contact tracers to find out what's driving that spike. When she spoke at this press conference, Greenville County had 2,371 cases, 65 deaths, and 453 infections per 100,000 people, or as she put it,
in Greenville specifically, we are reporting on 125 new cases today for the county. Yesterday's 145 reported cases for Greenville County was the highest number of new cases for our county in a day in South Carolina since this pandemic began. With today's new cases, the total number of cases in Greenville County comes to 2,492. And with today's two reported deaths from Greenville, there have been 67 deaths in Greenville County. To put these numbers in perspective, Greenville County currently has a higher case count and a higher rate of cases by population size than the entire state of Vermont, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Montana. And so for the past 2 weeks, we've seen some of the highest daily numbers of cases since the start of all of this. There has also been a recent increase in the last couple of weeks in particular in the percent positive data and in hospitalizations due to COVID-19. Our increased testing data has allowed us to better identify hotspots in the state, which recently does include Greenville County. For here in Greenville, we have determined that for the last couple of weeks, roughly a third or just over a third of the cases have self-identified their ethnicity as Hispanic. So we immediately began targeting some of our outreach efforts to these communities, which included interviews on local Latino radio stations and then redistributing our Spanish translated information and resources to those areas.
Since that press conference last week, there have been 700 new cases and 4 more deaths. However, Sarah Montero with the Hispanic Alliance said the message is getting out to more in the community.
In the past month, we have collaborated with multiple community partners to support them with translation and culturally appropriate messaging in Spanish, because we know that many in the Hispanic community are facing language access limitations and struggling to get information in a timely manner.
Dr. Eric Osman is Prisma Health Upstate's Chief of Preparedness and is an emergency physician. Osman said people who need medical attention should feel safe going to their doctor or the hospital, since putting off visits can be detrimental.
As a practicing emergency physician working in the emergency department, I can tell you we're seeing a lot of people that delayed care in March and April. People with congestive heart failure, people with diabetes, people with coronary artery disease who did not come in, and now we're seeing some of the consequences of that. So I will say, if you're sick, seek care at either your primary care provider or at the hospital. You know, we've spent a tremendous amount of time making the hospital, the primary care practices safe for people to come in addition to if they have COVID.
Bringing it back to COVID-19, Dr. Osman recounted some of the recent patients he's seen admitted to Greenville Memorial Hospital.
You know, I work in the emergency department here at Greenville Memorial. I worked on Sunday night and I admitted 2 people, one of them not much older than I am, who were very, very sick with COVID-19. These were people that were air hungry. They were having difficulty breathing. Both of them went to the ICU. So, you know, this is not the flu. This is not a cold. This is a serious disease. People get really, really sick, and we all need to do our part.
I know you've heard it before, and I'm not going to stop saying this. Wash your hands, socially distance, steer clear of large crowds in public and private spaces, wear a mask. Be smart. Seriously, it cannot be any more simple than that, folks.